Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program Benjamin Whitmer. He has been involved in an amazing new project. The result is a book called Satan is Real, The Ballad of the Leuven Brothers. He joins us by telephone from somewhere out west. Where are you at? Denver?
Denver, yes, sir.
Ben, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
How did this project come about?
It was actually the brainchild of Neil Strauss, who's written a few of these for different people, ranging from Jenna Jameson to Nikki Sixx of Motley Crue, I believe. And he'd written an article for the New York Times about Charlie in the 90s, I think. And he knew what a story Charlie had to tell, and he was looking for a writer to take on the project, and it sort of ended up in my agent's lap.
And when you say Charlie, you're referring to Charlie Leuven. And some of our listeners probably don't know who the Leuven brothers were. Who were they?
Well, they were, considered by Elvis Presley, the greatest country duo in the history of country music. They were inspirations for Johnny Cash, Emmylou Harris, Gram Parsons, all the way up to now with people like Will Coher, Will Oldham.
And Charlie didn't quite live to see this project completed. What happened?
No, sir. He had a pancreatic cancer, which we found out about, let's see, just about a week after before the project took off for real. So we had hopes for a little while that he was going to beat it, but about halfway through, kind of came to all of our attention that he probably wasn't going to survive it. And he passed away January 26th of 2011.
And his brother Ira had died a long time ago, back in 1965. So Charlie wanted to get his story down. And how did this work out? The two of you talked on the phone? How did this work?
Yeah, pretty much the majority of it was done on the phone. I did get to go down for about a week and stay around his house in Nashville, or outside of Nashville. He always said that he couldn't stand the city of Nashville, so he was about 70 miles out. But basically spent a week sitting on his back porch smoking cigarettes and listening to these stories.
So how'd you decide what to keep? I can tell that you've listened to him and you've recorded his stories and written them down, but you must have had a ton of them that you didn't put in the book.
Yeah, to put it mildly, I was actually talking to a buddy of mine after I wrapped this up, and he'd done one of these with a different gentleman. And he said, you know, I had a really tough time getting the 15 or 20 hours I needed to write the book. And I just kind of looked at him because I probably had, you know, two or three times that, if not more. But, you know, I mean, a lot of it was redundancy. A lot of it was for instance, I could have probably written the entire book on the abuse that he and Ira took at the hands of their father. There are just so many more stories. But you kind of just got to pick out the ones that best fit.
Mm. Well, I think you did a mighty fine job on it, and it's a really brisk read. And we go through all these different periods of their lives from the time that they were little boys, and we learn how they fell in love with this music from their mother. Their mother taught them these songs.
Yeah. I mean, their mother was just such a huge influence on their life. Just from the time they could walk, you know, learning how to sing these songs and going with her to the Sacred Harp Church and singing with her.
And we have this album that came out in 1959 that they called Satan is Real, and you've taken the cover of that album and the title for this book, and there's a song on here which I think is probably pretty significant considering how Charlie's passed away a year ago, and it's called Are You Afraid to Die? Do you want to talk about that song?
Yeah, that was a song that actually he talked about quite a bit. As regards himself and his brother, you know, this sort of, as he once put it to me, any Christian who's being honest with themselves they know that they don't know where they're going, you know, and we're all scared. And there's really no way around that. And it was something that he was sort of easing into, especially towards the end of the project. And you could tell he was sort of wrestling with his own fears. I think by the end, he completely understood that, you know, he didn't have a lot to worry about. For all his faults, he was a really good guy, but he was worried about his brother.
Here's a little bit of Are You Afraid to Die? Are You Afraid to Die? The Leuven Brothers from their album Satan is Real. And that's the name of this new book, Satan is Real, The Ballad of the Leuven Brothers. We've been joined by Benjamin Whitmer, who wrote the book with Charlie Leuven, who had all these great stories to tell. And Ira was kind of a wild one, wasn't he? Charlie's brother.
Just a little bit. I mean, he started out wild, you know, in just the normal ways, and that he liked women and drinking, but it seemed to escalate, especially after they started to make some money and get popular, and I mean, turned violent, obviously, with his wife, who he tried to strangle with a telephone cord, and I get the feeling...
Was that the same wife who shot him?
Yeah, she shot him 6 times for it.
Was that while he was trying to strangle her?
While he was trying to strangle her, she reached under his pillow where she knew he kept his .22 and shot him 6 times. And then when the police came and asked her about it, she said, yep, and if he ain't dead, I'll shoot him again.
And Charlie spent a lot of time as a referee, didn't he, trying to break up fights. Ira would call him up, and Charlie would go over there. He didn't like living close to Ira for that reason, did he?
Yeah, he got sucked into the middle of every single one. He said, you know, on both sides. He said one night it'd be Faye, that was Ira's wife at the time, calling him up. Saying, he's got me locked in the bathroom, he's got a knife, you know, you got to help me, Charlie. And then the next night it'd be Ira, you know, hiding in the bathroom, saying the same thing.
Let's talk about the music and how they learned to sing this way. You've got a great story in there. Charlie talked about how their dad would want the neighbors to come over to hear them sing, and the kids were kind of shy. They had learned these songs from their mother, and so they would hide under the bed and they would sing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, and it's another interesting comment on sort of the relationships in their family. But their father, for all that he could be very, very hard on them, at the same time, he was the one who pushed them to sort of get out in front of people. And whatever it took, he would have them do it to get over their shyness, including hiding under the bed and singing.
And they saw music as the way to escape from this hard existence on this cotton farm in Alabama. That was the way out, wasn't it?
That was exactly it. I mean, I've never picked cotton, but just hearing him describe it, I mean, it was just absolutely brutal, back-breaking work, and you couldn't imagine how anybody wouldn't want to get away from it, you know?
And Charlie started smoking when he was what, 6, 7 years old?
I believe it was 5 years old. That's when he learned to start rolling them. And he was still going strong when I met him.
What was he like?
I'm hoping that he was a lot like in the book. He was irascible. He was earthy. He tended towards a very, you know, earthbound philosophical bent. He wasn't one who was going to go on great lectures about metaphysics or anything, but he definitely believed in the spiritual. Pretty much like he sounds, hopefully.
And they finally made it to the Grand Ole Opry, and that was their dream, wasn't it?
That was absolutely, yeah, from the minute they first, at the age of, as young kids, you know, saw Roy Acuff going by and used to listen to the Grand Ole Opry at the, Ed Watkins Country Store. That was all they ever wanted to do, and they finally got there.
Ben
Wentworth.
He said,
I probably should have given up.
What's that now?
As Charlie said, you know, we probably should have given up by that time, but we didn't have it in us.
Well, they had some hard times getting there, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. They knew they were as good as anybody out there, and they were. I mean, if you look back at the people who were playing at that time, but it was just hard to do, and they didn't quite know what they were doing, you know. They were a couple of country kids trying to make it work the best way they knew how, without much guidance.
And they knew everybody. You talk about how they were friends with Johnny Cash, and you've got some great stories about Johnny Cash. They knew Elvis. They knew Chris Christopherson. I love the Elvis story. Ira really blew it with Elvis, didn't he?
In a big way. And, I really found that story compelling for a number of reasons. And one was, I guess I didn't realize... I mean, what happens in the story, if you don't mind me telling just a little bit of it, is that Ira directs a racial slur at Elvis, you know? And I didn't realize how prevalent that attitude was at that time period as directed to Elvis, you know, by country music. And, he blew it to such a degree that even though they were one of Elvis's favorite bands, he never recorded one of their songs.
I seem to recall he called him a white fill-in-the-blank.
Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And Elvis didn't appreciate it.
I don't think it was, at least according to Charlie, Elvis had been called that enough that he didn't seem to take it, you know, so much out of stride. He sort of took it in, you know, well, this is what I'm getting called. But Colonel Tom Parker was a different matter.
Hmm.
And for all his faults, Tom Parker would defend his artists. And I'm pretty sure that he's the one who made sure that Elvis never recorded anything by them.
So Elvis loved the Louvin Brothers' music, but he never recorded one of their songs, and according to Charlie, that probably cost him $2 or $3 million.
Yeah, as Charlie was Charlie told me, you know, he's known people who basically recorded one song, which was re-recorded by Elvis, and, you know, that's all they ever had to do. They could just live off the royalty checks for the rest of their lives.
You also have the story in here of how they did the cover for the CD, LP, I guess it would have been an LP back in the day, Satan is Real, the Louvin Brothers, and there's a picture of Satan, and there's all this fire burning behind him, and they're standing there in these white suits, and this is a great story. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, they cut up, Charlie's oldest son, Sonny, who's a great guy. They cut up his train track, a Lionel train track, because they didn't have any money at the time, and cut it into the shape of Satan, and then Ira hand-painted it, and took it out to a rock quarry, and, you know, filled all these tires with kerosene, lit them on fire, and just as they were about to start taking the shots, it started raining, you know, and they started hearing these explosions, and kind of looking around. And what it is that the rain, when the rain was hitting the hot rocks, they were just blowing up. So I think they were actually scared for their lives during that shoot.
Well, it's a great photo of them because they both look like they're singing their hearts out. And Ira loved the camera, didn't he?
That's what Charlie said. He said, you know, you can never find a shot of Ira where he wasn't looking dead into the camera, you know, just smiling. Yeah, he loved it.
By 1964, Charlie had had it with Ira, though, hadn't he?
Well, and I know, I mean, this I think really tore Charlie up, you know, because he felt like he tried everything, but there was nothing else he could do, and Ira was just getting worse and worse. I mean, the alcoholism was progressing. They were losing money. They couldn't, Charlie could barely afford to keep his family fed. And Ira was just getting more and more abusive. And finally, one day, Charlie told him, you know, that's enough.
Let's talk about the way they harmonized and the way that they learned how to follow one another's voices. They knew exactly where the other guy's voice was going to end, and the other guy would take over.
I find that, I mean, again, so many compelling parts of this story, but that's one that I find most compelling, is that, you know, this idea of blood harmony, of them not needing to, as Charlie would put it, wink or nudge or anything else to let them know when to switch parts. They just knew. And, you know, he said up until the day Charlie said up until his last show, which was in early December, and he died in January 26th, every time he did a Lubin Brothers song, you would see him, if you were watching him, just step over a little to make room at the mic for Ira. He just couldn't break himself of that habit.
Wow. All those years later, Ira was still there on the stage with him, huh?
I don't feel like he ever thought that Ira was gone, you know? He was just such a huge part of his life.
And we have all these great stories. And another favorite of mine was the one where this janitor comes up to him and turned out to be some guy named Chris Christopherson.
Yeah, Charlie recorded Chris Christopherson's first song. I love that story so much. And I love Chris Christopherson so much. It was really a joy to hear that one, which I didn't know, actually, until the book. And the funny thing was, Charlie said that he would tell that story to friends and such over the years, and nobody believed him. And then Chris Christopherson was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and he got up and he actually told that story in front of the camera, and Charlie felt really vindicated by that. You know, finally everybody will believe me on this one.
I see this book, Satan Is Real, The Ballad of Lubin Brothers, has been getting some really great press. What do you think?
I'm a little blown away, and I think it's a good position to be in, don't get me wrong. But I think everybody's a little bit taken aback, even up through the publisher. I mean, we all knew that Charlie had fans, the Lubin Brothers had fans, but I don't think any of us were expecting kind of the reviews we've got.
And it should be noted that after the Lubin Brothers broke up, the brothers each went solo, and Ira's career ended tragically a year later in a car wreck. It wasn't his fault, though. And Charlie went on and had a long solo career, didn't he?
He did. He had a great career, which I think was really satisfying to him. You know, there were people out there who always sort of pinned him as the lesser talent of the two. Ted Atkins, for one, I believe, was somebody who said that a lot around Nashville. So I think it was really nice for Charlie to have that career, but of course by the mid-90s he just sort of gave it up. He was just so sick of the scene.
Well, Nashville had probably changed a lot by then, hadn't it?
Yeah, it had. I mean, the Nashville, as he put it, you know, right now they just go as far away from country as they can get and still call it country, you know. One of the funny things was, during the time I was there, he was getting the ballots for the CMA Awards, or getting all the press stuff for it, because he's a member, so he gets to vote on it. And I don't want to name any names, but it was absolutely hysterical watching him go through the pile of mail and, you know, tell me what he thought of each individual artist.
I love it. Well, we've got the title track to the album and to your new book, Satan is Real, and I think it's a good tune to go out on. Tell us about this song, Satan is Real.
Well, as Charlie once explained it to me, you know, it's a song about choices. So you can make the choice to be a good person, and you should bear that in mind, that God is real and Jesus is real and love is real. But as it says in the song, Satan is real too, and you got to be wary of the choices you make around him.
Let's listen to a little bit of Satan is Real. Here's the Leuven Brothers on WYSO.
Satan is real, working in spirit. You can see him and hear him in this world every day. Satan is real, working with power. He can tempt you and lead you astray.
I attended service at a little church in the country not long ago. A prayer was led by an old country preacher who then raised his hands as everyone stood and sang, "My God is real." A warm breeze through the open windows brought in the smell of new-mown hay in a nearby field, and the singing of birds could be heard in the moment of silence as the preacher opened his Bible to read. And then a little old man stood up, bent with age, his hair thin and white, and said, "Preacher, tell them that Satan is real too. You can hear him in songs that give praise to idols and sinful things of this world. You can see him in the destruction of homes torn apart. I know that Satan is real, for once I had a happy home. I was loved and respected by my family. I was looked upon as a leader in my community. And then Satan came into my life. I grew selfish and unneighborly. My friends turned against me. And finally, my home was broken apart. My children took their paths into a world of sin. Yes, preacher, it's sweet to know that God is real, and to know that in him all things are possible. And we know that heaven is a real place where joys shall never end. But sinner friend, if you're here today, Satan is real too. And hell is a real place, a place of everlasting punishment. Satan is real, working in spirit. You can see him and hear him in this world.
Satan is real. The Leuven Brothers. They've been called the greatest duo in country music history, and their story has finally been told in a book called Satan is Real, The Ballad of the Leuven Brothers. Charlie Leuven talked to Benjamin Whitmer about his life, and Charlie passed away a year ago. The book just came out, and Benjamin Whitmer has joined us on the program today, and this must be fun for you, but it must be kind of bittersweet too, without Charlie around.
Yeah, very much so. Again, when it started out, when I first heard the project, I didn't know he was sick. And then when we heard he was sick, we heard there was a procedure that they could do at Vanderbilt in Nashville, which he thought gave him a good prospect of at least another 15 years. So we had really hoped to have this project done and have him out maybe touring with it and telling stories and getting to enjoy some of the success the book's had. So it's been pretty sad that he hasn't been around for it.
I love this story about Johnny Cash and the wad of cash.
Yeah. That was such a, I'm a Johnny Cash fan, you know, probably as big a Johnny Cash fan as it gets. I've even, I got to see him at the Ohio State Fair about 2 years before he got popular again for $10. And yeah, I just love him. And hearing that story, you know, that was a testimony to Johnny Cash's character in a way that I'm not like nothing else I've ever heard. I mean, it did for me what the movie didn't do, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was just perfect.
What was the process like for you? Did you tape record your conversations? How did that work?
Yeah. I had a little digital recorder, and I could stick it in my ear, and I would go out with my cell phone to this pond near my day job, and we just talk for an hour or two every day. I'd take them home and transcribe them, come up with questions, and we just kept doing it until we were both satisfied.
Are you serious? Was this your lunch break?
Well, sort of, kind of.
You'd go outside and you'd sit out there while you were at your day job, and,
yeah,
and you'd talk to Charlie Leuven.
Yep. I mean, there's worse ways to spend a lunch.
I love that.
It was wonderful. And it was a matter of, you know, probably 4 months we did that.
Well, I saw an interview online that you did with, I think it might have been No Depression. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
You're all over the place. I did a little web search on you, and you're getting all kinds of press, and it must be really gratifying for you.
It's really nice. I mean, but again, like you say, the sad part is that I really wish Charlie was here to see it. You know, again, he didn't always feel as appreciated as he might have. I think it would have done his heart good to see how many people are enjoying his story.
Are you working on another novel?
Oh, yeah. I've got another one in my agent's hands, and then I'm about halfway through another one. And, you know, this is my only hobby.
Have you read any of Donald Ray Pollock's stuff?
I love Donald Ray Pollock, and I loved your interview with him.
Oh, you heard it?
Yeah. You actually did another interview with a friend of mine named Frank Bill.
I know Frank. Well,
Frank Bill's a wonderful writer.
You're in with quite a bunch there.
I like those guys.
Well, I'm going to have to track down your stuff because I love that kind of stuff too. And if you guys have a kinship, that works for me.
They're great guys.
Well, Ben, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure's been all mine.
Our guest today has been Benjamin Whitmer. And he and Charlie Leuven collaborated on a book called Satan is Real, The Ballad of the Leuven Brothers. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.